Dini Clavell's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon and welcome to McKinney Flavell's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Today is November 17th, 2017, and I'm Craig Ruffalo, Vice President of McKinney Flavell, and I'm sitting in for our fearless and gregarious leader, Mike Coughlin, who has decided, yes, ladies and gentlemen, to take a vacation with his family to the East Coast. He found that that was more important than doing our wonderful Friday podcast. But never fear, we have one of the most sought-after commodity experts in the country joining us today. That's our very own Nicole Thomas, Vice President and Commodity Guru. Hey. Welcome, Nicole. Happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday to you too, Craig. Although I feel like you're setting me up for something here. That was a great intro. You should fill in for Mike more often. I love it.
Hey, there we go. Hey, Mike, you're out of a job. Nicole and I have taken over the airwaves. Watch out.
They let the two of us on here at one time. That's unbelievable. That's dangerous.
That will be I know. I think probably the rest of the country will sit back and say, well, these normally last 8 minutes. Now it's 45 right. minutes and they haven't stopped talking.
Exactly. Just a little long-winded, the two of us. That's all. Just a little bit.
Hey, that's what happens when you get us with a microphone.
Exactly.
Hey, Thanksgiving's coming up, Nicole. I know that you've got family coming into town as I do, and I have a quick question for
sure.
you, and it may not be as quick as I'm making it out to be, but what is your favorite Thanksgiving tradition?
You know, that's a good question, Craig. You know, I really enjoy the time spent with my family, period. That's the best element of Thanksgiving for me. And if I had to narrow it down to kind of two specific times, it's when we're all together, you know, cooking that Thanksgiving meal and all those traditions and recipes are being passed along generation to generation. And then right after everyone's had a chance to eat and we just kind of sit around the living room and with the food coma. And get out of our food coma by talking about, you know, childhood and all the crazy things Nicole did when she was young. And we didn't know she'd make it to adulthood, but here she is. Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know what? I've got this total image of just this couch and TV in the background with football on and the smells of the turkey and everything else. That's a good image. I like it. You know, our favorite family tradition, the Ruffalo household, is our turkey bowl. The football game we do in the morning, Thanksgiving, and we get about 50 to 60 people come out, families, friends, dogs.
We've got
a lot of dogs in our neighborhood, and we go down there and we get on that wet field and it's still a little bit muddy. We got the towels to keep the footballs dry, and you know, some of the dew hasn't completely come off the grass yet, so we got a little bit of that haze in there and just feels like winter. You know what I mean? And that always just signals to me it's Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Football and more football. But you know, speaking of traditions, the fall is typically represents the time of the year in the commodities markets where we've saw at the bottom due to harvest pressure, and we're now anticipating what's going to influence the market prices moving forward as we turn the calendar to the next fiscal year. And obviously, Nicole, since USDA put out its most recent WASD estimates on the grain markets, many of us looked at that and said, okay, have we hit the bottom? What's going on? And I'd love your take on the corn market specifically.
Yep, good question. You know, I, like so many others, have been watching this market behave in a very consolidated manner for the past, I don't know, 2-3 months now, thinking, well, maybe we hit the bottom back in late August, early September. But since then, and as you mentioned, post that WASD report last week, we've seen prices come down a little bit more, come under some pressure. And I think that really can be attributed to that huge increase to the corn yield. I mean, the number went up by almost Yeah, about 4 bushels per acre from the October report to where now.
What were the analysts expecting? That doesn't seem like anybody was really looking at that number.
No, I think folks were expecting it to come in a little higher than, you know, some of the thoughts in the summer were in the mid 160s. And under the best of circumstances, we could hit a 170 number. So I think the market was expecting something closer to a 172, maybe 173. But to get above 175 bushels per acre was a bit surprising. And then when you combine that with some of the other adjustments made within the WASDE report, most notably the increase in demand expectations for feed and export, but yet and still, we still see the number for ending stocks growing, now estimated at nearly, or projected, I guess I should say, at nearly 2.5 billion bushels. That would certainly, from a fundamental perspective, point to a pretty bearish market. And then longer term, you know, as we try to consider what might change this dynamic, or are we going to be more bearish, less bearish? What's the scenario? We have to think at least a little bit at this point about NAFTA and what's going on with that discussion. And it's been
what is the update on that right now?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Actually, just caught in a recent article from Yahoo Finance that it sounds like Mexico's take on it is it's no bueno. And if NAFTA were to go away, the most direct impact on corn obviously would be in the form of lower exports. Now, just to give a little history on this, you know, if we're looking at the 2016-17 marketing year, the U.S. exported a little over 13.5 million metric tons of corn to Mexico, and that was about 23% of all U.S. exports of corn. And so far in the calendar year 2017, we've exported about a little over 14 million metric tons of corn to Mexico, and that's about 31% of all those corn exports thus far. So, wow. You know, the exports to Mexico have been growing for years now, but its share of the total picture has certainly increased post-NAFTA. And if we go back to pre-NAFTA, for instance, let's take the 2006-07 marketing year, we exported a little over 9.1 million metric tons of corn to Mexico, and that was out of a total of almost 54 million metric tons. So a share that was a little smaller at about 17%. So at least to some degree, those Mexican imports are relevant for the nation's corn growers, and arguably more so post-NAFTA. And then, of course, if you're talking about corn, you also have to think about meat exports and demand from Mexico for imports of both beef and poultry products is pretty significant, representing about a third of those exports on an annual basis, give or take a few shipments. So that, I think, is one of those things that folks will look at longer term, along with some of the more traditional fundamental stuff like weather and how demand shapes up as this year progresses.
So it sounds like the potential for a little bit further decline on corn futures would simply have to do with maybe almost a psychology of what would happen on exports based on a potential of a termination of a trade agreement. But the bottom line is that it sounds like in sensing what you're saying is that, hey, we may have already hit some of the psychological bottom here and be careful. So what might be some of the things that we have to be mindful of to the upside potential on corn prices?
Well, that's a good question. I think the category that's always the most challenging to get a very solid handle on is ethanol. And unfortunately, that kind of ties back into policy as well, which leaves that in the a range of a lot of uncertainty. Let's put it that way. So
yeah, it sounds like most of these commodity markets are being influenced by political stuff.
It really is. Well, I mean, it isn't necessarily surprising because, you know, we've been in bearish market conditions for the corn market for a few years now, and you're more or less looking for something new to the story or something new to add to the equation to give us a little direction. And the market, I think, reflected that in why it had been consolidating and trading in a pretty narrow range, was there's just, you know, every at this point, point, we've digested a lot of what the expectations are anyway, because we're still pretty early in the marketing year, of course.
Yeah. But so you're thinking ethanol, is it the RFS that you're concerned about, or is it the way the EPA is kind of just jostling between the mandates for increasing it to 15% or scrapping it altogether? What is the concerns surrounding ethanol?
Well, you know, the uncertainty of the program in general. There's much of the growth of domestic ethanol production over the last 8 years undoubtedly has been a result of the renewable fuel standard and some of the mandates. And it seems that, you know, one day you hear everything's fine, you know, we're going to keep things as it is. We might even look at increasing the blend wall. And then it's sometimes just 2 or 3 days later, the news is, oh, well, we're not really sure about this. Should we do something different? Maybe we should change the credit system, blah, blah, blah. So if nothing else, you know, what drives markets, right? Uncertainty. And I think that, if anything could add a little volatility to the market and maybe give some upside or downside for that matter, suggestion to the market, it would be something along those lines. And then, you know, always, keeping an eye on things with the feed segment, or the feed category within, our demand forecast and what could happen there. But I mean, 2.4 billion bushels, it's hard to find something that would be incredibly bullish to the market, other than perhaps, you know, taking a look at the technicals.
Yeah. So right now, what are the non-commercials, or what we coin speculators? Where are they? Are they a net long, which means that they've been buying into this market, or are they net short? Where are we with that?
Well, you know, for the most part with corn, it's been neutral to net short. We'll see days where a little bit of interest, non-commercial interest, comes to the market, and then it tends to leave almost as rapidly. But it's similar to the consolidated pattern of futures. You're seeing the same type of dynamic exists with non-commercial market participation in general. And, you know, again, they too, at least to a degree, take a look at the fundamentals. And looking at corn fundamentals right now, you don't see anything that would give you the impression that there's going to be this sharp increase to futures in the near term. Other than if they're considering some of the technical components, which for the short term anyway, indicate that we may be in an oversold position, which might explain some of this increase in values today. The relative strength index on March 2018 corn was at about 34.5%, which would certainly be indicative of an oversold situation. And then yesterday's close at 349 a bushel was just above the lower Bollinger band, which was at 348.5, illustrating.
And that's basis March futures, is that
exactly
right?
March 2018. And so, you know, even with the Bollingers, the futures levels seem to be kind of tiptoeing that line. You know, the spread between the upper and the lower bands has widened too, which I think reflects that added volatility in the market. And the signal suggests maybe a 359, 360 a bushel level is sort of a happy medium from a technical perspective for those trying to gauge when to get in and out of the market. And then from a short-term Fibonacci retracement standpoint, next level of support is around 340 per bushel with resistance at about 358. So it seems the market could go 10 cents a bushel either direction. But again, nothing strongly suggesting a major increase to futures values and a whole lot of bearish information that's already out there. So not a lot really indicating some strong pressure to come, you know?
So I've got an image of somebody treading water right now in my head as far as the way that this sounds like for corn futures. So if you're somebody that's sitting on the fence wondering during the holidays, do I have to pay large attention to the swing potential on corn futures over the next 30 days? It sounds like to me, Nicole, that it's watch out for the thing that might pull the trap door open. And that could either mean a bullish to price or a bearish to price. But the odds are the bias would be, in my opinion, hearing what you're saying right now with the technicals, is that we've got a little more upside to this market than down, and therefore it might be good. I will put words in your mouth, but good idea to be locked in for a portion of your coverage through at least Q2 of fiscal or calendar year 2018. Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, it's like anything. You look at where futures are, what the downside possibilities are, what the upside possibilities are, and historically. And as we've chatted about on this podcast in the past, you're looking for the bottom third. And, you know, I think it would be prudent to certainly start looking at applying some coverage at these levels. If you want to play the market out a little while longer, so be it. But I don't think anybody would blame you for, 345, 350 March futures contract at this point, and a spread, maybe another 10 cents for the contract months going further out. But I'll also say the markets between Thanksgiving and Christmas, or rather New Year's, are notoriously volatile. So you get, pretty thinly traded markets. A lot of people are out of the office on vacation, spending time with the family. The farmers are taking their
Mike Coughlin.
I.e. Mike Coughlin, later to be Nicole. But, you tend to get that volatility there. But that can also provide an opportunity if you want to put some orders in the market for the possibility of a sharp down day and you luck out and get some coverage. I wouldn't blame anyone for that approach as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Nicole, and appreciate the opportunity to speak with you on this fine Friday.
Yeah, we got to do this more often, there, right?
I know. I love it. I'm thinking this might be the new wave right here.
There you go.
Hey, well, I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for spending some time with Nicole and I. As you go out there and you start tuning into those holiday Christmas songs on the radio, don't forget to turn in to the McKinney Favelle podcast series. So we look forward to the opportunity to talk with everyone. And don't forget to call on your experts at McKinney Favelle if you've got any further questions. So have a wonderful weekend.
Have a great weekend, folks.
That concludes this podcast episode. For more information, visit McKinney-Favelle.com. Also visit us on LinkedIn for the latest industry news, updates, and intelligence.